Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Hello, good morning. I wonder, in relation to Roundup, from I heard from in the BBC News that the evidence against Roundup is not conclusive. apparently, both the European Union and the United States government have not issued any directive to the effect that it is that it causes cancer. So I think there seems to be some confusion here. the fact that this case, the guy got $200 million, but it's very interesting that he could have got. I mean, the judge would have handed down that decision, and yet the U.S. government and the European Union, they've not,
So one of the things we have to be very careful about, I didn't say it when the previous caller made the comment, is that sometimes the companies that make and export cleaning agents, pharmaceutical products, have such a large lobbying system that they purposely either don't release information, release misinformation, or people ignore some of the information because the effects vary from person to person. And it's a very strong lobby, so what comes out, you get all kind of conflicting information. Some people say yes, some say no, some say inconclusive tests, some say maybe, perhaps, and so on. Yep.
Yeah, but the government, I guess, until the government the European Union, the American government issue, some directive to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
I guess people, hold on.
But hold on. The thing remains, though. How do you make the link? Because you and I may be sitting side by side, operating in the same environment, and I'm susceptible to things that you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I come down with symptoms and they say that's the reason, somebody look at you and say, but the man sitting down right next to you, nothing wrong with him. So, it's inconclusive.
And that's right, because for instance, that guy, suppose the guy is something that is hereditary in the guy's family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah.
So I was surprised to hear that, that it's interesting. I mean, it's a case that, yes, we have to continue and listen to what happens. And the company has appealed, and we have to really see what happens now. But until we hear the definitely, the Food and Drug Administration issue a directive.
Should we wait until then, or should we have means of checking?
We should have means of checking. Right. But I don't know if we have many means of checking.
But that's the question I asked him, too. Do we make the link, or do we make the connection?
Right. I believe we should. I doubt very much we would have any means of checking here.
And then the other thing is proper use or improper use.
That's right. That's the next thing.
Because I see and hear that regularly, too.
Well, I'm glad it was raised, because I wanted to hear somebody talk about it, because I listened to the report from the BBC, and I'm glad that somebody raised it and is on the discussion here.
I was glad that you raised it, too. As I told him, I flagged it, because I flagged other cleaning agents that I have a concern about. And let me say this again, I don't want to overstress it, but I can say this again. There are certain cleaning agents that you should not mix, and people do it. I know one young lady who knocked herself out in the bathroom because she mixed two cleaning agents in a tub and was leaning over scrubbing it. Now, the chlorine gas that escaped knocked her out. Now, it could have been worse. She could have been trapped in there. Nobody could have found her. It could have been worse. So we got to watch that as well.
Let me make this point. The caller before the last one said it will take about 2 years to fix the problem, the transport and all the sanitation and all that. I find politics most interesting.
Me too.
Couldn't that question be raised about the last government too?
Well, you see, the question that can be raised is that they waited 10 years and did nothing. The answer would be but hold on. You see, that's one of the reasons why I keep telling people I will always find myself at loggerheads with governments. Because if I say to you that you are an unclean person, you're dirty, if I buy your house from you, I can't expect it to be spotless. I must expect to go in with my bleachers and cleaners. I clean out, because I've been telling you for the last 5 years that you're a dirty man. If I throw you out of your house, I ain't expect it to be in pristine condition. Our problem is, and I have to quote the former minister of water resources, who said, the same people who given me advice or gave me advice is the same people who given you advice, the same consultants I use is the same consultants you're using, the same contractor you're using. Well, in my opinion, that says don't expect a different outcome. That's what my opinion is. Now, my opinion may be wrong, but that's my opinion is. So until we fix something that is fundamentally wrong with our country, and it's this. Smokey Burke sang it in his calypso. That's why I like the calypso. My party in power, they say. They have some people who, that is their objective. My party in power. And after that, I ain't going to do nothing. Things that go get fixed, go wait. Because, you know, I enjoy my party in power now. But if you don't fix it, the average Joe who does not have a party in power is going to ask, why am I doing this if I'm not seeing that? Which is what happened with the last administration. People were saying, why am I paying taxes if this is not being done? Why am I paying taxes if I can't get a bus? Why am I paying taxes if I can't do this? Unless you stop that, why am I? People can continue to ask it.
Well, they can ask the question now too. They will continue to ask the question, and for a long time.
And some other people will come and their voices will be heard.
See, I'm saying one fundamental point, Barbadians must, I mean, not politics, no, one fundamental question Barbadians must come to grips with is that this country is not producing the kind of wealth to give them the quality of life they want.
No, I was going to raise that with you. I was going to raise that with you because I caught your voice and I have heard your exchanges on it. And I wanted to ask you this. One of the things I noted, I think when you were talking to Sanka and you were talking about, you were talking about the things that the Tom Adams administration did and the various vehicles that he put in place. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you was this. When you look around Barbados now, okay, I saw Sir Charles making comments about Rihanna should buy Apes Hill. Should you make that a public company and let the insurance companies and the credit unions and average agents who want to invest in that if they're looking for vehicles? Should we make the Hilton that was going to be sold to whomever for whatever a publicly traded company where Barbadians could buy into it, the credit unions, investors who would like to, institutional investors, I think you call them. Can we create those vehicles today in industries that we see ourselves being part of? Renewable energy sector, for example, and that kind of thing. Can we do it?
My take is this, that first of all, companies that are listed on a stock market must have a profit record.
Well, and those places don't.
So naturally, the companies that I would want to see available to the public would be those companies
that have a track record in profit.
A good profit record.
Yeah, but you've got to start somewhere, sir, and that's my question.
So what I'm saying is I am not in favor of the ones that green projects available to the people.
Okay.
So I wouldn't put people down. And then, of course, one has to look at the fact that, if you look at the average Barbadian, we have to look at this is a small country, the number of people who would have funds available to buy shares and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people, most people, they have young income, they have children going to school, they have a mortgage.
They don't have disposable income to play with.
Right, they don't have the surplus. Mm-hmm. There's some who would, but not a large number.
Okay.
So one has to take that into account when thinking about putting shares on the market. This is my view.
Okay.
Let me ask you this.
When the ICBL was originated and the BNB, weren't they green as well?
No, well, the government led them for some years.
Right. No, here's my
point of profitability. And when they were sold, they were profitable.
But here's my thing.
At that point, that's when the people should have been. They've been sold to people.
But it wasn't sold to them. But let me say this. You have to start. I think you have to start somewhere. And one of the things I have a great respect for is something called the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, where employees are given an opportunity to own shares in the company in which they work, right? Because it gives them an idea of how buying shares work and how they profit from it. So they can perhaps begin to have an appetite for investing in something else. Right now, I don't think we do.
But for example, Mr. Johnson,
a saving society, put it in the bank and wait.
Yeah, the thing about it is, Mr. Johnson, the whole thing is that you don't, for instance, I mean, if you are, in a big country like Britain and so on, you would never advise a small investor to buy shares
risky ones.
In a company. You would ask him to buy it
in government
trust and so on. Mm-hmm. Because the unit trust, you know, there's the diversification and so on. The unit trust invests in a variety of companies, different sectors and so on, mm-hmm. which will protect, I mean, the small man. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go buy shares in a company, you know, if it collapses, well, all the money gone. Where, on the other hand, if you buy shares in a unit trust or the unit trust would invest in possibly 30 different companies, yeah. mm-hmm. different sectors, and so on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're protected there. So that's what naturally an investment advisor in Britain would advise any small person. In fact, I remember when I was studying, they said about if you don't have anything in excess of £20,000,
don't invest.
You know, don't invest in directly in. The stock market, mm-hmm. but I don't go to unit trust or investment trust or one of those indirect forms of investment, you know.
In today's environment, though, when we talk about building wealth and when we talk about building out the opportunities for people to get some income generation other than putting it in the bank and waiting, which is what we've grown accustomed to. The way banks are being operated today, where they're almost telling you, look, take your money and put it somewhere else. That's where credit unions are talking about, we got a lot of money, but we don't know what to invest in. And you have the Barbados Stock Exchange almost non-existent. Yeah. My question is, how do you recreate, how do you re-energize your public into trying to diversify their holdings from just putting it in a bank? I will tell you my experience, for example, working with this company. When OCM took over the company and there were shares in OCM on the market and we were given opportunities to own shares through an employee stock plan, I suggested to some of my colleagues that we should form an association of small shareholders, see how much it come up to, see if we could leverage the shares we had. And nobody was interested because they didn't see any benefit to doing it. Now, if you don't have that type of thinking, where do you start?
Yeah, but I feel that right now, you were talking about the Hilton and so on, you know.
Yeah, I picked those two because I saw them in the newspaper recently.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was, let's take it for now. The question, and you what you're confident going to, right where you want to go. Because you
talk, I follow you a lot, sir.
If you look at the investment market.
I follow you a lot.
Mr. Johnson, if you look at the investment market in Barbados, there's nothing to invest in. I mean, look, bank deposits. Well, there are no shares available. You're just on the stock exchange. But there are very few. All the major profit takers in Barbados are foreign owned, as you know. Mm-hmm. So there are no shares available to the people.
Right.
So the stock exchange is a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think needs to be done, I would love to say, I would love to see many, for example, take National Terminal, which all of us buy gasoline, right?
Mm-hmm.
National Terminal, to me, is an ideal company to sell to the public. I mean, the government could sell off, not like they did with National Bank and ISB at one time. Mm-hmm. Since, you know, for the same point I made earlier about people, not a large number of people, over one, and on the first sentence, you could say, put 10% or thereabout, whatever, mm-hmm. on the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
1 year, next year, you could put some more, and you see my point.
Mm-hmm.
And give the people an odd chance to own a company that is should be pretty worthwhile and profitable.
I kept that one on the back burner because I wasn't sure what's the state of the sale, whether it was still pending. And I picked on the Hilton because the government had said they weren't going to sell shares.
Right,
in Hilton.
Yeah,
and as I said, April, I saw Sir Charles saying Rihanna should buy it. But I'm not sure what she would buy it and do, whether it's to develop it, sell it to other foreigners, or manage it herself. The challenge for me, sir, is this.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, you mentioned the Tom Adams era, and it worked because I think in that era, there was a move to there was a nationalistic move that was across the Caribbean. Coming out of the 1970s
era, right.
There was.
You're right.
Right? Good. And I know it because I was in Trinidad between 75 and 81. And I know what was happening there. And I always relate the story of Royal Bank of Trinidad and Tobago Limited because it burns me a lot. When I joined Royal Bank in 75, we had an ESOP. Right?
John, by the way, that is the same bank the students took over in 1970.
Yes. Yes.
The movie counter.
Yes. Yes, sir. I'm picking it on purpose. Yes, sir. That was the one.
The
two banks that didn't stay were Chase Manhattan and Citibank. The New York-owned banks did not stay in Trinidad, and they became Workers Bank and the National Bank, Trinidad National Bank. Okay? Now, Royal Bank had ESOP, and you could put 60% of your bonus into ESOP, and after 5 years, because of arrangement with government, you could sell those ESOP shares and get your money tax-free. The government said you could do it, but only after 5 years. If you sold before 5 years, you were taxed on a sliding scale of, I think, 5 to 15%, depending on how many years you've kept it there. I put $1,000 into ESOP at $1 a share in 1975. They matured in 1980. I was migrating to Barbados in 1981, and I was asked, do you want your ESOP shares, the ones that matured? And I say, yeah, sure. You know what my check was, sir? $21,675 and change. Because Royal Bank shares were then trading at $21 plus per share. Yeah. So $1,000 invested in 1975 gave me $21,000 in 1980. And I asked myself, why only put $1,000 again? But, you know, hindsight is 2020. What I'm saying is, based on that experience, if those who had seen that type of growth in their investment, they would be enamored in investing again if the opportunities arose.
Of course, of course.
But if you've never had that experience, you'd ask yourself, why do? If your experience was Trade Confirmers, Clico, and all the ones that didn't work, what will incentivize you to get back into the business? And that's what we need to start looking
at. But no, Mr. Johnson, if you're a good investor, you would analyze the market, the company before buying.
A lot of people don't do that. So
but you
know
have
that
to, because I found it difficult to understand how people who understand investment would invest in Clico, because people had to mean many things. I was going to tell many things about Clico I would not put even 1 cent in, because of management and all different things about that thing that I observed.
Yeah, but you see, sir, but you are somebody, you've admitted that you do invest and that you do take care, but people don't. They look at the end and say, look, somebody promised me 15%, while somebody else promised me 5. I go in with 15%.
No, but Mr. Johnson, you work in the bank. Let me ask you a little question. Mm-hmm. I tell you all the time, look, if somebody comes and somebody tells you, look, I am going to give you, say, 8% on your deposit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know that. All right. If you tell me you're going to give me 8% on my deposit, and you have administrative costs, then you have to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's look at it. Suppose it's say 8%. Say 4% is, say, for your administrative costs and so on. Mm-hmm. That's 12. And then your profit, say 4. Mm-hmm. 16. Mm-hmm. Now where
are you going to get the rest from?
Where are you going to get in Barbados? Somebody's going to pay you. We're going to invest money to earn 16. So I immediately question people who come with these high. I mean, I remember how that same people made the same Clico when they're offering what they call the flexi premium.
Flexi premium.
Somebody told me, well, said, yeah, tell me something. And I use that all the time. And people, I tell them, look, study it. Mm-hmm. If this person is giving you 8, people have to invest money to earn to be able to pay you.
Sir, right? I have said the same thing to people who said, let us start a new bank and have a minimum interest rate of X. And I said to them two things. Where is the interest going to come from if they don't have the charges, if they don't find a way to invest your money? Where are you going to get 4% interest from? And that's the first thing you have to ask yourself.
And first rate borrowers.
Exactly.
Have good borrowers.
You have to have
to earn your interest.
You have to. And that's to walk them through it, but they don't usually follow it, because they want what they want at the end up front. That's the only way I could put it.
But let's say to you before we go, the thing about it is that the way I mentioned the contour manager and those companies that he did establish. For instance, suppose, for example, Johnson, those companies were sold over time to the people. Mm-hmm. You realize the capital that could be accumulated in Barbados?
Yep. So I have often looked at where we could have been, but we're not.
This is it. This is what I'm saying. That's why that I'm fascinated with his era. Because I think it is something that we need to look at and see, because those companies could have been sold to the people. We would develop capital in the country. Now you know right now we have to look to foreign investment for everything.
And sir, I have a serious challenge with us doing that, because it puts us at the mercy of institutional investors who at any moment may say, you know what, this ain't working out, I'm done with that. And walk. And we have no way. I know people say, yeah, you can't take the building out of Barbados. You know, the land's still there. Drive around Barbados and look at the number of for sale signs. Look at the multiple companies trying to sell it. Drive along the South Coast and look at what used to be a thriving hotel that's now a shell. Where Caribbee used to be is nothing. Next to it, there's a big open space. You can see the sea. Look at those things and ask yourself, how are we going to get this back into operation? And can we depend on somebody coming from somewhere else and say, oh yeah, I can fix it? What do they want in return for fixing it for us? And can we pay the price? This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello. 434-1790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine, sir. And you?
Not too bad. It's a rare person who doesn't get discouraged, whether it happened to us or to an associate we are trying to cheer. The answer centers around one word, perseverance. As I listened to yesterday's program, hosted by Mr. David Ellis, which was very interesting, I heard the dynamic, knowledgeable, and social commentator, Mr. Anthony Wiggins, commenting on Ms. Viola DePisa's choice as the new president of the DLP. But before criticizing Ms. DePisa, although she and Ms. Sanford were very critical of Ms. Motley, this time I should say he should reflect on the record of Abraham Lincoln. However, Mr. Johnson, sir, in 1996, I predicted that Ms. Motley would become the first woman prime minister of Barbados, which became a reality, and she has already silenced her critics. A month before the election date was announced, I said Ms. DePisa should run in St. John, as she was the only one I had seen competent and capable to rub shoulders with Ms. Motley. Bear with me for 1 second, sir, to give you the record of Abraham Lincoln to which I make reference. Failed in business at 22. Ran for the legislature, defeated at age 23. Again failed in business at 24. Elected to legislature at 25. Sweetheart died at 26. Had a nervous breakdown at 27. Defeated for speaker at 29. Defeated for elector at age 31. Defeated for Congress at age 34. Elected to Congress at age 37. Defeated for Congress at age 39. Defeated for Senate at age 46. Defeated for Vice President at age 47. Defeated for Senate at age 49. And who would believe it, was elected President of the United States at age...
So all it shows is that there are opportunities in the United States for people to continue their political careers. The challenge with comparing United States politics with Caribbean politics, I think you well know, is that we operate at a different level. And we sometimes don't give people a second, a third, a fourth, or any opportunity based on party affiliation, based on social standing, based on our impressions of them. It's a gentleman in Barbados who is now an advisor to the Prime Minister of Barbados. His name is Clyde Maskell. I sat in various chairs in here as a producer, as a moderator, and listened to people ripping into Mr. Maskell for all sorts of reasons, based on political affiliation, not on his ability to do anything. I saw a comment on WhatsApp, reading through the WhatsApps just now preparing for the program that said, if you should cross back over now, you know, what would be his chances? And I chuckled when I read it. Yeah. That's how we are, sir. So I don't think we could duplicate Abe. But good observations. 434-1790, this is Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Hi, morning, Dennis. How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine, thanks. I read with interest on the Sunday Sun of August 12th
mm-hmm.
on the back page where the
cruise
Minister
crisis.
Of Tourism and International Transport, the headline says cruise crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a 15-member National Cruise Development Commission in place to work through some of the challenges and some that were listed by the Prime Minister, by the Minister mm-hmm. of Tourism, Honorable Kerry Simmons, spoke about port size constraints, inefficient passenger infrastructure, lower interest onshore activities, and undesirably poor customer service were all listed as issues which could cripple the local cruise industry. And the article also made reference to the average spend
mm-hmm.
and the fact that the average spend in Barbados has been declining.
Mm-hmm.
I am not sure that the cruise situation is in crisis, but I agree that it does need some relooking and some rethinking. And we've got a couple of issues that need to be resolved in that area. First thing is Bridgetown. Bridgetown is a dead and dirty city. And until we tidy that up and get some life back into Bridgetown, there's nothing for cruise passengers to do. How often have 10,000 cruise passengers sailed into Barbados on a particular day and it's a public holiday and everything in Bridgetown is closed? Now, we've seen some decline in the number of onshore activities. So what do tourists do, cruise passengers do when they get off the ship? Is there anything for them to do? Now, I remember participating in a conference years ago at the Marriott Sam Lawrence Castle with some of the directors from the Florida Cruise, Caribbean Cruise Association.
Mm-hmm.
And us hoteliers were up in arms with the guys from the Florida Caribbean Cruise Association. And one of the complaints that we made was the fact that the ships were leaving the port at 6 o'clock, which we thought was too early. And after a long lot of talk, as the saying goes, the guy from the Florida Caribbean Cruise Association got up and said, what is there for my people to do in Bridgetown after 6 o'clock? He said, give my people something to do, and we will keep the ships in port longer. Of course, nobody had an answer. Where in Bridgetown can you go at 6 o'clock and get a sandwich and a beer?
Well, I don't know if Lucky Horseshoe that is now open near the St. Mary's Church would stay open past that.
You had the Waterfront.
Waterfront Cafe. Yeah.
Waterfront Cafe.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, and it's good to hear your voice again first, let me say that. The other day I had a call from Dr. Hudson Husbands, and I really enjoyed that conversation as well, because I think, you know, my years of working alongside you guys have done me a world of good. Let me say this, and I know you know this for sure. The challenge has always been our crews and how they interact with our land-based activities. And you started with Bridgetown, and you are correct. I made the comment talking to the incoming president of the Barbados Chamber when I said to him, years ago, we used to lime in Bridgetown. Now, lime in today may have certain bad connotations, but when we limed in Bridgetown, I would finish work at a bank at, what, 4:30 in the afternoon. We'd go and sit and have a beer across in the office. That's what it was called. So we could always call home and tell the missus, I'm at the office late, when we across the road at the pub called the office, throwing some darts and having a drink. Lyman meant you stayed in Bridgetown. It meant less congestion on the road. It meant you congregated, met a friend, spent some money in Bridgetown. Now we get into our cars at the as soon as before the office closed, and we head out. Our children lime at malls. They don't lime in Bridgetown. Liming now in Bridgetown is a bad word. It means you're begging tourists and you're harassing people. So, and they tell me, you know, okay, so we're setting up the university using the building on Lower Broad Street that used to be the mutual building, so right, there'll be activity. But it doesn't return a culture of a living city just by one or two things. And it has to change, because there's a gentleman who is a barber, or I don't know if he still is a barber, Mark, who calls from time to time and say that when you sail into port, you should see activity. You should see people lime and drinking. The shallow draft. I said to one of the, I think it was Austin Husbands, we were having a chat one day, and I said to him, look at the shallow draft. You should see a replica of the oysters in the shallow draft. People should be cooking fish. You should smell the aroma of food and people drinking and having, you know, I ain't saying getting drunk, having a good time, having lunch, sitting there, rather than looking at warehouses and oil terminals. Something got changed about the look of the city. And I agree with you, Clyde. But we've been saying this for how long?
I don't know. We probably died saying it before any changes.
Jeez, I mean,
Bridgetown and its garrison has been designated as a World Heritage Site by UNESCO.
Mm-hmm.
Are we marketing that? Are we doing heritage tours of Bridgetown, the garrison? I mean, the garrison driving around there, it looks in a fairly sad state. With the exception of the pavilion that was restored by the Blaze family, I don't see a lot of restoration work going on.
No.
Look at what has happened in Bridgetown with the around the Jewish synagogue and that area.
Yep.
It only goes to show what a little imagination and a few dollars
can do. Absolutely.
We need more of that. If you look at Costa Rica, when areas of Costa Rica were designated World Heritage Sites,
mm-hmm.
their spend and visitors to that attraction went up in excess of 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're marketed. If you watch CNN, you see that on 60 Minute Vacation, Costa Rica zip lining and river rafting
mm-hmm.
and those kind of things are now prominently featured on 60 Minute Vacation on CNN. We have not taken advantage of that World Heritage Site. Another question I have is, what has happened to the Cruise Convergent program? Years ago, there used to be a program where you used to put information on board ships to try and encourage people to get off and see Barbados and see the activities and see things in Barbados with a view of converting some of those passengers into long-stay visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a formal program, and hotels were asked to participate in it by providing changing facilities and so on for cruise ship mm-hmm. passengers and so on. And I haven't heard no mention recently. When I say recently, talking about a couple of years now, I've heard no reference being made to the Cruise Conversion Program and whether it is an active program or not.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get some more life back into Bridgetown and get some interesting onshore activities. We are going to continue to struggle. I noticed in the same article it said St. Martin, the average St. Martin earned $422 million per annum versus Barbados sector that generated $57 million. Mm-hmm. One of the things in St. Martin is that St. Martin has casino gambling.
Yep.
And that's an activity that people will leave a ship and go and participate in, even though some ships have casinos.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the whole range of things we need to look at, and I wish the government well, and I wish the National Cruise Development Commission well in their and their funding. But we need to do something. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need to do something for cruising and cruise passengers,
mm-hmm.
and give them things to do. Because I'd be interested to find out what percentage of the cruise passengers disembark the ship when it gets into Bridgeton Port.
Mm-hmm. That is, and the other thing is, Clyde, and again, you would know this, is the relationship between the cruise lines and the tour operators and the people who actually run some of the onshore activities, because
yeah.
they develop a relationship with the cruise ships so that the people on the ship are told which events to go to, which places to visit, long before they get to port, so they can plan when they get there.
The cruise director on board the ship is the one who controls that.
Yep. Yep.
So you develop relationship with the cruise directors and the hotel managers on board the ships,
mm-hmm.
and they can assist you. They can assist you along the way,
mm-hmm. yep.
in terms of getting people off the ship and getting people to do things. But the things that they must do must be interesting. Mm-hmm. Another factor we need to take into consideration: cruise ships are becoming bigger.
Yep.
And they have
a lot more activities on it. Yeah.
A lot more activities yep. on board yep. the cruise ships.
Absolutely.
And we need to factor those things in. I see. I don't remember which cruise line it is, but they even have rock climbing.
Royal Caribbean, I think, have it. Yep.
And rock climbing.
Yep. And I think the largest new one, there's this spiral water thing that takes you how many thousands of feet down. So, yeah, the activities are there. Yep.
So they're making it bigger. So we need to take all those factors into consideration when we are developing ideas and putting things in place to earn more money out of the cruise ship
mm-hmm.
passengers.
And here's the other factor that we have to look at, sir, and it's this. Where are we in the chain? If the cruise goes through three or four ports before getting to us, unless we have something of super attraction, their people will be spent out by the time they get to us.
Exactly.
So we also have to look at where we are in the chain.
Yeah, look at where we are in terms of the ship's
itinerary. Yep.
Yeah.
Because that will determine. Go ahead, sir.
Just one quick point I want to make, and you made reference to it,
mm-hmm.
and it relates to the use of chemicals, the mixing of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
I had a frightening experience once in a hotel where I worked, where I remember the housekeeping staff mixed toilet bowl cleaner
mm-hmm.
with
Clorox.
Clorox.
Yep.
And it produced a very strong gas, and that employee mm-hmm. was knocked out. Fortunately, she was found in time
mm-hmm.
and was able to be resuscitated, and she fully recovered.
Mm-hmm.
So the misuse of cleaning chemicals and the misuse of pesticides and weedicides and so on can contribute to some of the challenges, some of the health challenges
yep.
that some people face.
Yes, sir.
And that's all I would need to say at this time.
Thank you very much indeed. Good hearing from you. This is Dr. Brass.